Welcome to On the Green Couch, brought to you by the UNICE Primary Support Centre.
Welcome to today's session of On the Green Couch. My name is Ilani Goosen and I'm the occupational therapist at UNICE Primary. With me in the studio is Caitlin Bernardi, the new occupational therapist at the pre-primary. I'm very excited that Caitlin has joined the support team. She has significantly lightened my caseload, and I think more importantly, the pre-primary girlies are now receiving the attention that they do deserve. Today we will be talking about a topic very close to my heart. What is OT and why does my child need OT? I think often parents know that OT and children go together, but they don't necessarily know it exactly what it is that we do. So Caitlin, welcome, and thank you for helping me unpack this topic.
Thanks, Ilani. I'm so thankful to be part of this UNICE family and to work with these special pre-primary girls. I am an old UNICE girl, so UNICE has a very special place in my heart.
What is they say about blood running green?
Yes.
Old girls. So I think the natural place to start is, what is OT? So Caitlin, do you want to start unpacking the definition for us?
Yes. So I think let's start with, what is OT? What does OT stand for? I know I've spoken to parents before and I'm using OT, OT, OT. And then at the end of the conversation, they're like, okay, what is OT? So let's start there. So OT stands for occupational therapy. So the definition of occupational therapy is, it's the art and the science of the use of meaningful activities to assist a client or a patient or a child to engage in their occupations. So you might be thinking, what is then occupations, especially occupations of a child? So their occupations are play. This is more for younger children, leisure, sports, older children, and then school, which is their main occupation, rest and sleep, and then activities of daily living. These are like grooming tasks such as dressing, brushing teeth, eating, and then social interaction.
So basically, a child can receive occupational therapy if they're struggling with any of the occupations. So let's explain that a little bit more so it makes sense. For example, let's look at difficulties within the play domain. If a child struggles with typical play for their age, like a little grade R girl who doesn't like building puzzles or struggles to get the clothes on and off her Barbie girls when she's playing, or refuses to play in the sandpit as she doesn't like how the sand feels, or even is afraid of some of the playground equipment, of going up high or walking over the tires. Those are all examples of difficulties or struggle areas within play. And here I really want to remind parents of a previous podcast, The Importance of Play, that our clinical psychologist Renee spoke about quite very well, expanding on this topic about how important play is. Okay, let's go back to our examples. Let's look at the next phase, looking at sport and leisure. So that's more for the older girls. So if a child is very clumsy or uncoordinated or struggles a lot with learning a new dance step or a hockey strike, we all know that not everyone can be A-team players, and we don't want that for everyone, but we want them to be able to participate. It's part of being in the school system and experiencing school. Then let's look at school. This is probably the biggest area. Difficulties with reading, spelling, mathematics, writing, being able to maintain your posture on your chair, socializing appropriately with your friends, and the planning that goes involved with all the steps and tasks that you need to be able to do in the classroom. Then let's look at your sleep domains, difficulty falling asleep at night or staying asleep. And then lastly, looking at social interactions. It's struggling to make friends, being oversensitive, or disliking being in a big group. Here within the school setup, children are predominantly referred to me at the primary school due to problems or concerns experienced within their school occupations. Caitlin, does it differ for you at the pre-primary?
It's more or less the same. The girls often get referred to me for school-related tasks. So for the grade R's and double noughts, the tasks that they might be struggling with is cutting, colouring, difficulties with remaining seated, pencil grip, following instructions, and then there's also the gross and fine motor skills. I just want to highlight that some girls come from different backgrounds, such as creches, playgroups, or they're just at home, and some of them don't receive the same level of stimulation. So it's important to keep in mind that some girls will be struggling with certain tasks where the other girls will be fine. It's just because of the exposure to stimulation. And then, of course, we get a lot of referrals, or I get a lot of referrals for difficulties with play. So because they're younger, they might be struggling with interacting with their friends, such as biting, hitting, shoving. Those behaviors are actually part of play, and that's something I get referred as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially with that age group.
Yes.
So most often children are referred to us by the class teacher, but as an OT, we always look at the child holistically and to determine if all the areas that are impacting on the difficulties or that is impacted by difficulties. We believe more can be achieved when there's motivation and enjoyment rather than just giving exercises. And I think that's true for adults as well. As soon as you enjoy something you're doing, you want to do it. And the activities of a child is play. So we literally play with kids. So we get to have lots of fun during our sessions. It might be goal-directed play or trying to achieve a goal, but it's still play. So children tend to enjoy coming to us.
Yes, I agree with that. I often say I have the best job in the world because I just play all day. Play has such a big part in these kiddies. And it's so valuable, play.
Definitely.
So Hilani, you mentioned that most of the children are referred for OT by their class teachers. Can anyone else refer them?
Most definitely, Caitlin. Classroom difficulties are most often picked up by the class teacher just because they spend that much time with them. Mm-hmm. But referrals often come from the other support members. At UNICE, we really are very privileged to have a full support team comprising of 2 remedial teachers, a clinical psychologist and a registered counsellor, and then, of course, us 2 OTs. Any one of them can refer if they think it is necessary. But I've even had referrals in the past from a PE and a music teacher. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the class teacher refers frequently as well. Outside professionals can also refer for therapy, such as a doctor, speech therapist or psychologist. And then we really want to encourage parents to refer, or even if they're not wanting to refer, just to contact and to talk to us regarding the child's functioning or their concerns that they might have. Is that the same for you at the pre-primary, Caitlin?
Yes, it's more or less the same. I also do class-based interventions where I actually sit in class and I observe. I assist the teacher with placement, classroom adaptations, and then I also identify learners who will benefit and then suggest to those teachers that those children or those kiddies should be referred. Additionally, I also do grade double knot stimulation groups where I aim to provide stimulation to the whole grade, and then in hopes that when they go to grade R, they've had that extra boost, and because they've had that extra boost, they can handle the demands of grade R a lot better.
No, that'll definitely be beneficial.
Yeah. So I would like to, you probably have a big question now of what actually does OTs do and how does OT help my child? So I think, Hilani, you can maybe speak more about this.
Yeah, I'm sure that is the big question now. What do we actually do, or how do we help? So in occupational therapy, we look at the underlying skills that you need in place for a child to participate in all the occupations, all the different areas that we spoke about earlier. So normal development is actually quite wonderful. It takes place naturally. Children generally obtain all the skills they need through participating in their daily occupations and daily activities. Mm. To explain this better, we often use a house analogy. So we view development as a house with our senses laying the foundation of the house. We have our outside senses that we all know about. That's taste, smell, vision, hearing and feeling. And then we also have 2 additional inside or body senses that we call them. They tell us about the movement that we are doing, whether or not we're stopping, moving forward, accelerating, twirling. And the other one tells us about where our body is in space. What position does our limbs have without needing to look at it? So those 7 senses that I just explained are the foundation of the house, because all actions that we take rely on what we can observe from our environment and how we prepare our body to respond to those demands. So let me give a practical example. Hopefully that'll clarify it a little bit more. Let's take playing tennis for an example. When playing tennis, your eyes track the ball. Your hand grips the handle of the racket and you can feel the racket. Your inside senses tell you whether you are moving towards the ball and if your hand is positioned correctly to connect with the ball once it reaches your racket. So those are your senses taking in the information from the environment, so the foundation. Then the bricks of the house make up the skills that we need to function. So let's go back to our tennis example. You need adequate muscle strength, balance, coordination, and planning, motor planning, to be able to hit the ball. So the building blocks are what we need in place to be able to participate in the occupational task that we spoke about earlier. Then lastly, we look at the roof of the house, and that is really the functional component. The playing tennis is the functional component, so you want to be able to play, actually hit the ball correctly and across the net. So the occupational tasks children engage in, from reading, playing sport, writing, socializing with their friends, all of those tasks form part of the roof. So it really is the functional component. Caitlin, maybe you can explain a bit more about the different building blocks.
Yes, I agree. So the building blocks, as Ilani mentioned, are those skills a child needs to be able to perform functional tasks. So some of the skills are physical, balance, coordination, dominance, gross and fine motor skills. You get emotional skills, appropriateness of emotions, control of emotions, self-esteem. We normally, if a child is struggling with their emotional skills, we'll then refer to psychology, and then they'll help if necessary. You get visual perceptual skills. This is your ability to read and write. Then motivation. These are all the skills that a child needs. And then I would just like to bring it back to the house analogy. So Ilani spoke about the foundation, which is your seven senses. And then in your house, you've got building blocks or bricks, and then the roof, like Ilani explained. So if your foundation is not strong enough, of course, the bricks that are on top of the foundation are also weak. So if one brick is weaker, then of course the rest of the bricks around it will be weaker. And then if the bricks are not strong enough, then of course you won't be able to engage in your occupation. So that's a nice analogy. Another idea I like to practically describe this is how OTs work with the children is, imagine your child is standing in front of a locked door. On the other side of the locked door is their occupation, their play, their school. And your child needs the correct keys to be able to open the door. The keys in the story is then the skills, like I mentioned. So sometimes the children don't have the right keys, or they don't have the right door, or they don't know how to use the keys. So we as OTs assist in helping your child obtain that correct keys, the skills, so that you can so that they can open the door and engage in their occupation to their best ability.
I think that was a lovely comparison, Caitlin. And I like the way you explain the cracks in the house forming, the foundation, which causes the bricks to crumble and the roof sometimes to collapse. Hopefully we can avoid that. Here, I think it's really important that I have to say that development follows a general guideline, but it really is different from child to child. We can't put a child in a box and say you're going to develop at exactly the same rate and same pace as another one. I can evaluate any child in a specific class, and not everyone's skills are going to be on the same level or on par or age appropriate. Some might have strengths and other a little bit of weaknesses, but it's when those differences lead to a functional problem. Mm. Anything that's withholding a child from their potential that we really want to step in. And that's when we want to be the child to be referred so we can help them to reach their potential.
As therapists based at the school, we generally follow a similar process to what would happen in a private setting. So, Ilani, what are the pros and cons of being a school-based OT?
Wow, Caitlin, I think this is now my 12th year at UNICE. Wow. So I definitely have to say one of the biggest benefits of being a school-based or at the school is being able to observe the children in the busy multi-sensory school setting. You get to observe them if they're struggling to focus in the classroom or on the playground, how they interact with their friends or on the playground equipment. You really get valuable information from just observing the child in their natural element and to see how they function. And then the downside, in my opinion, is definitely the limited contact that you have with parents. In private, you would be able to touch base with your parents after they've dropped off a child after each session, just to touch base and find out how they are, what you've addressed, what they can look at. And that's definitely not happening within the school system. That's why I really place a lot of emphasis on the first feedback session after I've assessed a child, that we explain everything nicely to parents, and they are really appreciated when both parents are there, because it's sometimes hard to explain it to your spouse, all the technical stuff if they're not there to hear it from the person who's giving the information. So just to get everyone on the same page.
I agree with that. And also just to highlight, yes, we don't have much contact with the parents, but we have amazing contact with the teachers. Yeah. We can really take hands with them. And I mean, the teachers spend most of the time with the children. So they see things that can really benefit in therapy. So, I would like to just highlight that parents should get in touch with us if it's via email or speaking to the teacher of any concerns they might have or even improvements that they've noticed. It's very important to just take that step and contact us. So, Ilani, what are the takeaway points you want to leave with parents?
Caitlin, I think I want to first emphasize early intervention. The earlier a child is referred, the better. Generally, if they are referred earlier, the duration of therapy is shorter. It is also easier to address underlying skills, as younger children have not yet developed compensatory skills or splinter skills that make our job that much harder. Let's give an example again. Think about a little grade R girl with poor pencil grip. She most likely has a weak pencil grip because her intrinsic or small little hand muscles aren't strong or adequately developed yet to sustain that grip, versus a grade 4 girl who also has a poor pencil grip. So the grade 4 girlie most likely has the same originating problem, that it is the weaker muscle strength in the hand, but she's already now, the grip has become a habit. So it will take that much longer to address and to rectify than the little grade R girl. Then I think I want to highlight that lives of children is a lot different from when we grew up. Maybe not so much for you, Caitlin, but for people from my generation, definitely is a little bit different. And then we can't take away the effect that COVID has had on our society. I mean, lockdown and not being able to go outside, not being able to play, the restrictions that were placed on us has really had a big impact on the development of children. Children need to be active and busy to develop the skills that they need. So when a child avoids a specific task, I think that's noteworthy that we need to maybe put up a little bit of a red flag. If they don't want to participate in a task that they dislike or can't do, and here I'm not talking about homework or chores, because I think every child avoids doing those, it's more a typical task that you would expect a child to like to do. So if they dislike a certain type of play, for example, sentry play with gloop or slime or sand, or they dislike swings because it makes them dizzy, those types of things could raise a red flag. And if you see them, that should, as a parent, be something for you to maybe consider or wanting to talk to your teacher or to one of us about. Caitlin, do you have anything you would like to add?
I think parents should just ask when in doubt. Yes. Talk to the daughter's teacher. Contact Ilani and I directly. Raise your concerns. I mean, you know your child best. So really don't wait. Like Ilani said, early intervention is very, very valuable.
And like Caitlin mentioned earlier, sometimes it's literally just about giving them the right guidance for the right stimulation. Just something that was a little bit missed out. That can be the answer, not necessarily even full therapy.
I agree.
Well, I can talk about hours for OT, but I think we've covered what we set out to do. Thank you, Caitlin, so much for helping me chat about a topic that I think both of us love, seeing as we're both OTs. But I appreciate your input. Thank you, Caitlin.
Thank you, Ilani. This was amazing. Thank you.
Thanks.